Livestock producers seek genetic variation, which exists between animals, for making directional changes in their beef herds and for selected traits of interest. When selection decisions are made, there are expectations of a response to those selections. So going back in history, there are key events, I think, that address this. The importation of beef genetics, establishment of research, education, and extension programs, the beef cattle performance revolution, and the printing of the first sire summaries, which have all had a profound impact on U.S. beef production and increasing value and our production here in the U.S. Since the Spaniards first introduced cattle to the New World and through the great cattle drives of the late 1800s, beef has become a major economic business in the U.S. And as America became settled and our economy grew, beef production and ranching became a way of life. So much so that beef industry provides more than 1 million jobs in the U.S., which has created a ripple effect in the economy. And for every dollar of cattle sales, there's approximately $5 in additional business activity generated. And during the 1990s, U.S. beef production generated more than $30 billion annually in direct economic output. That plus about five times that amount per year in related economic output as well. So we have, I think, accomplished some great things here in the U.S. in becoming globally competitive. And regardless of genetics move from one breeder to another or across continents, there is that anticipation of adding value. Increasing output creating efficiencies to the nation's beef herd. This transfer of genetics wasn't only about serving domestic demand for beef, but it also is enhancing our competitiveness globally. And given that the UN has projected the world's population to reach 9 billion people by the year 2050, that has also led for the call for food production to be increased by 100% over that same period of time, by that year. Increasing production levels and efficiencies are a growing concern. Additionally, meat is demanding an increasing share of the global market as diets in developing countries are changing and as income in those countries are increasing. Although global competition has intensified for the growing international demand for beef, certainly opportunities exist for us here in the U.S. to increase our demand or our global competitiveness as well and address that market. While agriculture research is continuing here in the U.S., we should be concerned and need to become more vocal as an industry regarding federal funding for such research. We have not always enjoyed the abundance in this country that we do today. I think our system of research, education, and extension should be credited for much of that of our standard of living here and our abundance of affordable and healthy foods. I think that is certainly evident as you travel globally into those countries that lack that system of research and education. And they're trying to duplicate what we're doing here today or what we've been doing for the last 50, 75, or 100 years or more. They're trying to duplicate that because many countries that now, I'm surprised as I travel globally, those countries that have a difficult time feeding their own population. While we can trace the roots of our current system of research and education back to the 1800s, we can trace the roots of agriculture extension back to 1903 when Seaman Knapp arrived in East Texas to talk to local farmers. Knapp identified Walter Porter of Terrell, Texas, to set aside a small part of his farm as a demonstration farm using technologies to grow cotton. Because of the success of that first step, the USDA Cooperative Extension Service was formed. And by 1920, 17 years later, there were 7,000 federal extension agents working in almost every county in the United States. And by 1930, they had set up more than 750,000 demonstration farms. However, investments in public agriculture and research have slowed since 1980, placing research stations and our land-grant universities under growing budget constraints. And during this period of time, the private sector has increased research and development significantly faster than the public sector. American beef producers historically have responded aggressively to an increasing demand for our product, with increased production levels and improved efficiencies. While current cow inventories, beef cow inventories have returned to levels of the 1950s. Beef production has more than doubled over the same period of time. While much of that improvement in productivity can be traced to improvements in genetics, the nutrition, our management, and our improved health programs, it has been the last 30 or 40 years that our increased focus on performance programs has been responsible for significant gains as well. Many of our successes can be traced to work done within the framework of the Beef Improvement Federation. Genetic evaluations have played a significant role in the improvement of beef cattle. For many characteristics, with the first sire summary published by the American Simmental Association in 1971, and was followed closely by most every major breed in the U.S. Additionally, advancements in artificial insemination, that technology since our earliest sire evaluations, have improved our ability to develop and implement genetic evaluations with increased accuracies. Genetic trend tables readily available on association websites are a testament to our success domestically. Genetic trend tables, such as the one presented here by Dr. Larry Keene at the Meadown Research Center on their crossbreed EPD work, has shown as much as 60 pounds or more increase in genetics for yearling weight alone since the early 1970s. Additionally, over the same period of time, the combination of our genetics, our management and nutrition on those health programs, we have seen an increase in average dressed carcass weight for steers by over 150 pounds. This has also helped establish U.S. as a leading source of genetics. This is particularly evident in a 2007 report prepared for the Meat and Livestock Australia, which showed that the genetic trend for Australian breeds are generally similar to the trends of those breeds in other countries. This was true with one exception. The report said that the consistent trends of breeds in the USA and Canada for reduced birth weight and calving ease, direct calving ease, while the trends for yearling weight are equal to or better than trends for other countries, including Australia. It was interesting, in our conference a little over a week ago in France, that the emphasis now being placed globally on direct calving ease and lower birth weights that traditionally wasn't there. In fact, the French Charolais Association has put aside some bulls that they're encouraging their producers to use that are calving ease bulls. I think this is being driven largely politically in some of those countries, as Scott had mentioned in one of his first slides regarding welfare globally, and we're beginning to see some of that here, and we'll see more of it. So these traits that address less input from the producers to increase efficiencies are important to us, and we're beginning to see that expand globally, and I think we've taken a lead in that role here in the U.S. So as I mentioned earlier, that there is an expectation response to improved imported genetics. So as the international community continues to develop stronger, objective-based performance and genetic improvement programs, the intensity of identifying superior genetics can expand across borders beyond current levels for those breeds and breeders who can better characterize their populations and cattle for important traits. So this question was addressed by joint international research projects, which have shown when using current genetic evaluation methodology, sires rank similarly across countries and within regions of the United States, which has led to greater interest in international evaluations. And we continue to see growth in that area. One such example of this research was conducted by the University of Georgia, Donahue, in 2004. It was funded by the Charolais International, which found strong rank correlations between countries of New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and the United States. Those rank correlations as high as 0.96. Incidentally, those rank correlations were as high as what we see within regions of the United States as well. So it gives confidence to producers as they begin to look internationally for genetics. So the production of international genetic evaluations can provide those improved marketing opportunities for genetics with increased accuracy, increased confidence of selection across international borders, and also accelerate genetic progress given the benefits of the larger pedigree and performance information that is made available. However, international genetic evaluations are not without their problems given the differences in data collection, the timing of data collection, production sales and marketing competition. So far I've tried to lay out the groundwork that I think thus far that has brought us in the role of genetics and what has played here in the U.S. to making us globally competitive. From the migration of genetics and the use of genetic technology, use of AI, which has made us globally competitive with regards to beef production, both in production of exportable beef and also as a genetic source. I want to now move into a discussion without outlining what I see as challenges now faced by the U.S. beef breeds as we work to remain both competitive globally and domestically. Both the U.S. and beef cattle inventory and U.S. beef breed registries reached their peaks in the 1970s. As you see right here, Dr. Tom Field, about 5 years ago, I believe it was, had presented and told us that, I believe it was, over the last 10 years, we needed, I forget, Tom, 37,000 fewer bulls, I believe was the number you used. So I wonder, what's that look like if we go back further over a larger, longer period of time? So I took a look at this, and I found that recording numbers of animals, both of these graphs represent a decrease in cow numbers. One of them represents decrease in cow numbers, beef cow numbers in the U.S., total beef cows and heifers in the U.S. The other one is beef breed registries across the major breeds in the U.S. according to the National Pedigree Livestock Council. I'm just scaling both, put them on the same graph here. And what it's showing is that I was surprised that one graph was as identical to the other one as it is, that we are directly driven, beef breed associations, by the total beef cows in the U.S. So much so that the industry needs approximately 400,000 fewer bulls today than it did in 1975. And this is accounting for a direct loss in registration numbers that continues to strain the association budgets for research and development as well as other services. So much so, in fact, that if we put dollar figures to that in terms of registration fees, we consider all those cattle were registered, would have been registered, and then half of those might have been transferred, that accounts for a direct loss of income across those breeds of approximately $11 million annually. So beef breed associations have benefited greatly from research and development from USDA, Animal Research Services, and land-grant universities, among others. However, development of new technology often takes a building block approach where new discoveries are based on earlier discoveries and increased knowledge. We are a witness to this today as genomic enhanced selection continues to improve, and optimism that it will play a larger role in genetic characteristics of our cattle. Dr. Ignacy made the statement last year that to question whether to use genomic information will now be replaced by how to use it efficiently. Historically, in the United States, genetic evaluation services have been provided by a few land-grant universities. However, over the course of the last several years, genetic evaluations have moved in-house for some breeds, and while others have contracted with genetic service providers other than the traditional land-grant universities. This change was necessitated as budgets became strained over the retirement of faculty, which have not been replaced, and an increasing need and desire to focus more efforts on improving genetic evaluation models, spend more time doing the research. This transition has not been without its bumps and bruises as we have moved forward, but moved forward we have. But our transition is far from complete, however. Today, I believe we spend more time trying to access, prepare, and manipulate our data sources and less time modeling data and applying expertise to improve and expand our evaluations. The challenge is compounded further as the amount of data and complexity of those problems will increase and expand. Additionally, new technologies will offer more computing options and new genetic tools for traits which historically have been difficult to characterize in our population. The current system of islands of data represented by the various breed associations, these are registration numbers from 2005 according to the National Pedigree Livestock Council. But that current system of islands of data, I'll call it, is inefficient and inhibits active associations from moving forward in a more efficient way. We need to begin capturing data more efficiently, which can benefit the building of resource populations for research and development of genomic tools. Many of these breed associations today have genetics or the same animals represented across those populations. We need to find a way to bring these together to build larger populations to work with. The current situation is that we have these multiple and disparate sets of data that are intended to represent the same and similar concepts of membership, pedigree, and performance databases. So the cornerstone of our success the last 30 or 40 years has been the collection of quality phenotypic data, which has allowed our producers to capitalize on research and technology transfer programs for genetic improvement. This will continue to be important, or research into genomic markers may have little, if any, impact. The old adage, genetic evaluations are only as good as our data that we collect, will certainly continue to be true and will become, in fact, perhaps more important as information as expansion of genomic data will require large volumes of phenotypic data in the future and will be required to update existing marker effects. Not only must we strive to do a better job of collecting data for those traits already represented in our databases, but also new traits as efficiency, health, adaptation to our environment, and healthfulness of beef, we must expand into new traits that will make beef production more efficient. We must also identify synergies and further evaluate the sharing of resources between associations. I believe synergies exist that will make each of us stronger and ready to address the challenges. One such example has been the formation of the Ultrasound Guidelines Council under the direction of the Beef Breeds Council, which oversees a standardized collection of beef ultrasound data. Last year, more than 160,000 ultrasound records were reported to breed associations through the participating UGC labs. We've also seen this expand globally. I mean, Australia and the United States were two of the first countries, but we're starting to see the use and uptake of ultrasound technology expand globally. In fact, Mike Tess, their executive director of the Ultrasound Guidelines Council, completed the first day of certification in Brazil just earlier this year. So another good example is the Carcass Merit Project. Four universities, the USDA Agriculture Research Service, and 13 breed associations cooperated with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association to collect more than 8,200 carcass records. That database has been used to help validate markers that are existing on the market today. We need more opportunities like this and expand these synergies and these cooperative efforts across breed associations and across our research institutions. There are other examples as well. The National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium, which many of you are familiar with, also the National Beef Cattle Center of Excellence, which is addressing many of the objectives and position of the breed associations I'm visiting with you here about today, trying to find ways to bring and cut out some of the inefficiencies that we see across breeds. So we must concentrate our efforts to build a more efficient information infrastructure which will further support the development of research and technology. This will help provide a more advanced and a more efficient genetic evaluation service, which incorporates the best technology to provide superior responses to the needs of our producers to ensure competitiveness both domestically and internationally. Thank you.